Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and thanks for listening. I have a wonderful program for you today. We're going to be talking all about mother-daughter relationships later in life and how parenting, specifically mothering, may change over time. As the mother of two children myself and being a daughter as well, I know that as mothers and daughters age, their relationship shifts. It changes in complex and very, very interesting ways. So I'm really excited to talk to my guest today. My guest is Sandra Butler. She has written dozens of articles, reviews, and essays that have appeared in a range of periodicals and anthologies. Her latest book is called It Never Ends, Mothering Middle-Age Daughters, which she co-authored with Nan Geffen. In the book, Nan and Sandra talk to women openly about the joys and challenges of mothering middle-aged daughters and discuss the issues that continue to surface in that relationship. Now, Sandra and her co-author Nan draw from their own experiences as mothers and from interviews with over 75 older moms. It's a fascinating book, and I highly recommend listeners that you purchase the book and read it. Now, I've never met Sandra in person, but as some of you listeners know, I've done my own research and written several articles on mother-daughter relationships over time and how that relationship changes. Also, I know, as well as all of you do as well, that there are so few books out there to help older mothers continue to care and mother their daughters, no matter the age. So the book by Sandra and Nan is so important and so valuable. So welcome to the program, Sandra. Great to have you with us today.
Well, thank you for that very wonderful introduction. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, wonderful. And I can't wait to talk to you about what you found and about your book. But first, tell listeners about where you're coming from. I know that you're in your late 70s and you have two adult daughters, but what inspired you, Sandra, to write about mother-daughter relationships now?
Well, it's kind of, the answer goes back a little way. This is my third book, and each one of my books has been designed to open conversations that were not being had or that were being whispered to best friends or maybe to therapists. The first book in 1978 was called Conspiracy of Silence, The Trauma of Incest, and it opened that conversation in a very dramatic way. The second book in 1988 was The Cancer in Two Voices, and that was a book about a memoir about a woman dying of cancer and the people around her and how they were dealing with her impending death. Again, another subject that in 1988 was not as widely and openly discussed as it is now. So for me, it's always been important to say what hasn't been said, what needs to be said, to encourage and invite women to step towards conversations that will allow them, in the same way that it allowed me and Nan, to learn how other women are dealing with the same things that you're dealing with. And in this case, as a woman who's about to be 80, with a daughter who's about to be 60, and another one at 56, I wanted to know how other women were thinking about this, because as they age and we age, we're still mothering them. But in the larger culture, it's invisible. We're not considered to be actively mothering. But of course, We are, whether it's grandmothering or helping with money or helping with time or being a listening ear or being support or whatever it is that's needed, we still are actively mothering.
And were you having some challenges or struggles, Sandra? I mean, I hear that it's coming also from your personal experiences. So were you feeling unsure? Were you feeling challenged about mothering middle-aged daughters, so to speak, in your own life?
No, not at all. I was feeling curious. I was wanting to know if other women were feeling the way I did, were thinking the way I did. And I simply, both Nan and I, we couldn't find any books that were from the point of view of the mother.
So now, why aren't there books, Sandra? Why aren't there other books out there? Let's talk about that for a second.
I think that the books that are out there are books that are prescriptive. They're books that are telling you how to improve your relationship. It's an expert telling you what would be a good idea for you to do with your daughter. There wasn't anything with the mothers speaking about what their challenges, what their strengths, what their vulnerabilities are. And I don't know why, but every subject matter, there has to be a first, and it seems to be my role in life to be
to be the first. I love it. And before we get to the book, are you close to both of your daughters at 60 and 55, and do they live near you? Tell us about your children.
Well, I can answer you in two ways. I can answer you about myself, and I can answer you about the book. When we interviewed women, after they were assured that the interview would be anonymous, that was, of course, the first question that they had for us. They talked about closeness. That was the language that mothers talked and measured themselves by, how close they were or not close to their daughters. About half were close and about half were not close. I would say, for me, I'm very, very close to both my daughters, but in very different ways. Hmm. So I think that the language needs to be opened up a little bit so that there's a fuller range of what closeness means. So for some women, being side by side silently in the kitchen cooking a grandmother's recipe for a family dinner with no conversation at all is extremely close. And for other women, going to the mall and shopping and just fooling around and not talking about anything important is extremely close. And for other women, talking deeply and being known and knowing the daughter's life and inner life is extremely close. So we needed to parse that out.
And I love that, by the way. I just love that, Sandra, because I'm constantly asking people in surveys and questionnaires and interviews, you know, how close do you feel on a scale from 1 to 10 to your partner, to your child? And I get a number, but none of us have really explored what that then means to that person.
Exactly.
And like you said, is it doing? Is it talking? Is it living close? Is it sharing? Is it revealing? And what does that mean to someone? Whether we're talking about a parent and child or husband and wife or two partners or two friends, we need to parse that out and talk more about what that means. Love that.
Now, I think that the relationship with the daughter is very particular because she came from your body. She emerged from your body. She has the same body that you do. She will menstruate. She will probably give birth. She will go through menopause. She is going to echo, and she is seen in the larger world with all of the limitations of the way the larger world sees and what they expect from women. So there's a very particular set of parallels in this relationship that, of course, in some ways you can extend it to other intimate relationships, but we wanted to focus on this because we felt it was very distinct and unique.
Right. And you're saying that they're similar. Mother is similar to the daughter. And sometimes that produces whatever we think about closeness. And sometimes that similarity produces conflict. Now,
absolutely.
In your book, you interview 75 older moms to, mm-hmm. you know, gather insight and information. Were you worried that the moms wouldn't discuss such a personal subject with you, even if it was anonymous, that they would focus only on the joys and the positives and not the struggles and challenges?
Well, that's such an interesting question, because with every single one of my books, I'm asking women to talk about the most intimate, vulnerable, and personal parts of their lives. And what I have consistently found over 40 years is that the words are pooled in their throats. They are longing and yearning to say them to someone who will receive them, respect them, honor them. The words are there. They want to be spoken.
Right. So that they're hungry to tell someone, and you're asking the questions. Now, why did it have to be anonymous? Why was that a requirement?
Because a lot of mothers did not want their daughters to know on the page more than they were prepared to say to them in person.
Okay. So they were worried that it would change their relationship in some way as well.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
The process
of the interview led mothers, and we designed it that way, to some steps to be taken. But before we arrived at the steps to be taken, we wanted to excavate the truth of what it is to be the mother of this middle-aged woman. And part of, to go back to the closeness, part of the closeness we found was mediated also by temperament and values. So, you know, kids come in, at least I believe kids come in with a temperament. They're shy, right. They're extroverted, they're leaning more toward verbal, towards artistic, you know, however they are. And when a mother has a daughter who is temperamentally similar to her, it lends itself to a familiarity and an ease. If a very extroverted mother has a very introverted daughter, there's extra work that needs to be done to bridge that. And then there's also the values by which these middle-aged women are living. We found that when daughters are reflecting the values that their mothers cherish, the closeness becomes easier. When they are in a life that is bewildering to their mothers in terms of their religious or cultural or political values, closeness becomes more difficult. And we wanted women to have a chance to think and talk about that.
That is so fascinating. I'm thinking about my own daughter. She's 23, so she's not middle-aged yet. But I think you're right. As she has grown into adulthood and has the same values and the same temperament and personality as me, I mean, she's even in clinical mental health, so she's even going to become sort of in my field as well. We've grown closer. And, you know, talking about that is easier. But I can say that even, you know, if she wasn't like that, I would want to still bridge the gap, obviously, and talk to her about her values and her temperament. But I would have to think about ways to do that. So
Absolutely. Let's
get to those invisible ways that mothers continue to parent. And because I heard you say that at the beginning, Sandra, invisible ways that mothers continue to mother or parent as their daughters age. Why invisible? Well, what does that mean, and why is it invisible?
I think that there's a way in which both mothers and the larger culture think, and I certainly did when I was raising my kids, that I would devote myself to their well-being for 18 to 20 years, send them off either to college or to work. They would make their way into the world, and I would return to the things that were of interest to me in my own life. But of course, we know that doesn't happen. Kids return. Kids have bad love affairs. Kids
right.
your daughter's age, they have marriages that end badly. They right. have physical demands. They may have grandchildren with special needs. They may lose their job and need to have financial help. They may need to think out loud about how to proceed in their lives. There are so many ways that we are still central. I think what's a little bit different than your experience with the women we interviewed is one of the most exhilarating things, I guess, that we found is that as women are in their 70s, most of the mothers were in their 70s, some in their 60s, some in their 80s, time becomes a distinct variable in your life. There isn't going to be enough time to do everything. And time is a motivator to open conversations, to clear up old things, to not postpone. And also, we found that women are much braver as old women than they were in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And they report this as well. They have less need to protect themselves against the mistakes they made or the errors in judgment that they made. I think that it's precisely because they're in relationship with time in a way that they weren't at 50 or even at 60 that frees them from whatever ego barriers might have been there to be able to approach their daughter in a way that allows them to fully respect and open to what it was to be them in a non-defensive way. And that's
But if time isn't an issue now, then, Sandra, and they're more able to air mistakes and talk and bring up the past, how does it still become invisible? Is it just invisible to society but not the mothers then?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Exactly.
I think that when you think about how old women are seen or older women are seen, mostly it's as grandmothers. That's the role that we are seen as, you know, as facilitating the next generation, which of course is something that we are doing. But the need that daughters have for their mothers is very different than it was when they were 20, but it's still very, very deep. So when I remember when I was in my 50s, I didn't think about my mother, and we had a very good relationship. I didn't even think about her from one week to the next. I was very, very busy in my own life. And when we spoke, mostly I just wanted to be sure she was okay. And it was very important to me that she knew what I was doing because I needed my mother to know I got the raise or I bought the house or the kid did well in school or whatever. But I never thought to say, what are you reading? How are you sleeping?
What's stressing you out? What are you doing in your daily life? Are you finding joy in music? Are you relaxed? Absolutely. You know, it's so interesting because I do a lot, as I said, articles on parent-child relationships, which is in trying to improve that relationship. And I tell children, middle-aged children like myself, to call parents, especially mothers, but both parents, and ask those kinds of questions.
Exactly.
What's stressing you out? What kind of music are you listening to? What television shows or movies are you watching? Books?
Exactly.
Because that builds a different kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that the other thing that I do want to mention that's very distinct to the aging process is all of the psychological work that's involved in preparing your legal and medical affairs. So who's the legal power of attorney? Who's the medical power of attorney? How do you divide your assets? What if you're estranged from one child and not another? What if one child makes a successful living and the other doesn't? What if one of your children has a special needs grandchild? What if your value is everything equal, but in fact the lived experience of your family requires something different? These are all things that women are starting to think about now.
That you're saying daughters should talk to their mothers about?
Daughters need to be open to... I wasn't thinking about the daughters. I was thinking about the mothers. Mothers need to... This is one of the things mothers were worried about saying to their daughters.
Right.
That some daughters are really very good in some ways and not in others. So if I interview a 75-year-old woman and she has one daughter who is warm, nurturing, tender, supportive, that's the daughter she wants to have with her when she's sick, when she's convalescing. She has another daughter who is in another city and working in some big corporate job of some kind, and she doesn't have the nurturing gene, but she's very competent and very smart and very responsible, and she wants that daughter to handle more of her affairs. Well, if you broke it down like that, how are those sisters going to feel about that? Because those decisions mean that the mother is communicating what it is, how it is she values you and what she values you for. So that's a complicated thing.
That's a complicated and very challenging and difficult conversation. And just even if there's one daughter, you know, for a mother to go to a daughter and have those end of life, will, power of attorney kinds of conversations, yeah, you know, what do I want at my funeral and afterwards? They're very difficult conversations. I know that for myself, from a very young age, my mother has been very vocal about all of that. And I have had to learn as a daughter to be okay with those conversations, because not only are they important in general, but they're important to my mother. And
exactly.
So for all the middle-aged daughters out there listening, it's not an easy conversation. It's very difficult, but it's so important to have it, because for my mother, it's been important. Now,
exactly.
Sandra, we only have a few minutes left, and I just want to give you a few minutes to tell some stories about what the mother said about the joys of mothering middle-aged daughters and the challenges. So give us a few, just, and again, we only have a few minutes left,
right,
some of the stories or ideas about what some of the joys were and what some of the challenges were.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that the challenges probably could be summarized in the ways that mothers silence themselves, walk on eggshells, bite their tongue, are very careful not to say anything that might disrupt the relationship with the daughter, about housekeeping, about parenting their grandchild, about her partnership, about how she handles money, any of the things that might be disturbing to mothers. They pretty uniformly reported being silent about those kinds of things, because
right,
it would be too disruptive. I think that the joys probably have to do with the freedom that I referenced before, which is a freedom to be able to be brave enough to step towards whatever is unresolved and unfinished and incomplete in the relationship, to take responsibility for whatever ways we shaped and participated in that, and to come to a kind of far side with our daughters. I think that the way that happens most of the time is that when a daughter is in her 50s, life has bruised her enough that she understands that her life is not what she thought it would be at 25. Nobody's is. And
right,
the mother understands that her life isn't what she thought it would be at 25. So the two of them can be in a much more seasoned and realistic and authentic way. They can learn to love each other across the range of what it is to be human together, not only mother and daughter, but human beings trying to live a life that's a valuable life to them.
Well, I love that, Sandra. I love the notion that there are challenges about being silent, and that is difficult for mothers of middle-aged daughters, but also to take responsibility, address the past, address those fears, and talk about what it is to be human together. Well, thank you much for joining us today, Sandra.
Well,
it was wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
What a wonderful book, listeners. I highly recommend that you buy it. And again, the book is called It Never Ends, Mothering Middle-Aged Daughters. If you're interested in connecting with Sandra Butler, you can visit her website at sandrabutler.net or on Facebook at Sandra Butler. And as always, thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help your relationships be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, theLoveDoctor.com. And I also have a new video course that's called How to Find Love in 7 Days. So if you're interested in finding the right person for you, check it out on my website under courses. And again, that's Dr. Terry, theLoveDoctor.com. So until next time, everyone, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.